Well, I left the spending limit bill in my We have before us the committee substitute for Senate Bill 255. That was a request to be held over a day. Okay, so we won't be taking up Senate Bill 255 up this afternoon. We'll take it 2 minutes at ease here. Okay, the only bill we've got up this afternoon is House Bill 524. It's probably one of the bigger bills that will be taken up this session, along with longevity bonus and the Alaska Railroad and the royalty oil contracts. It's an act relating to the spending limit and providing for an effective date. In 1982, the Alaskan voters passed a constitutional amendment which placed a limit on the amount of state revenues that the legislature could appropriate each fiscal year without voter approval. Each succeeding year, the limit is adjusted by change in population and inflation. The constitutional appropriation limit calls for federal indices to be used to calculate the annual rate of change in both population and inflation. Further states that these indices will be prescribed by law. House Bill number 524 does three main things. It defines the inflation index to be used, it defines the population index to be used, and it established the appropriation base of $2.5 billion for FY85. The inflation index is to be used in House Bill number 524 as the percentage annual rate of change during the fiscal year 2 years preceding each fiscal year in the consumer price index for all urban consumers for the Anchorage metropolitan area. This means that for the purpose of determining the spending limit for FY85, we will be using the published Anchorage CPI urban index for 1983. There are several reasons for using these indexes. One, the governor would not have to use guesstimates for putting together the executive budget. Two, it is consistent with several federal and state programs. For example, Senate Bill 251, which passed the legislature last year, calls for using this index to determine the allowable increase in the Education Foundation formula for FY85. Three, this index is specific to Alaska. And four, the index is published every 2 months and is generally not subject to revision. Five, this is a common use index and the public is familiar with it. As far as the population index recommendations in House Bill 524, it is the percentage continuously compound annual rate of change in estimating population over the previous two decennial census as established for the U.S. Census Bureau. The reason for using this index are, one, this is not subject to guesstimate. Two, the method used to determine the index are not subject to change as they are constitutional mandate. And three, we know for the next 5 years the population factor to be used and calculated the limit. And four, although it may not accurately reflect short-term change in population, it does appear to accurately reflect trends over the long term. You have before you is committee substitute for House Bill number 524 drafted there. There was only one change that was made in House Judiciary under line number 14. They used the word additive was there, I believe, and the sum was there, and it changed it to the product, to multiply versus. And also the other two technical changes for wording was under lines number 14 also. We eliminated the word percentages and just put the word rates there. Also under line 15, we added after the percentage annual rate of change. That was just a technical change. I also have produced for you is a proposed letter of intent for a committee substitute for House Bill 524, and the reason is so everybody can understand the formula that is being used. Here to also testify on this bill is Hush Dillian, with our legislative finance analyst, to testify on this bill. Why don't you come on up, and then we'll have questions.
Mr. Chairman, my name is P.S. Dillon. I'm with the Legislative Finance Division. You covered some of the issues that this bill resolves, and I'll review some of them, and then if you have any questions, I'd be most happy to answer them. CSHB 524, the main purpose of this of this bill is directed at resolving the issues involved in calculating the limit, the actual calculations that go into deriving the limit. As required by the constitutional amendment, this bill prescribes two indices. For the inflation index, it specifies that the Anchorage CPIU, which is the All Urban Consumers Index, shall be used. And for the population index, it specifies that the trend established between the previous two censuses should be used. In addition to prescribing these two indices, this bill also clarifies three ambiguities that resulted from the language of the constitutional amendment. The first ambiguity that this bill clarifies is the number of years of adjustment. It was not clear from the constitutional amendment whether the adjustments should be made to the beginning of the fiscal year or the end of the fiscal year for which we are calculating the limit. What this bill does is it specifies that the adjustment shall be made to the beginning of the fiscal year. Another way to look at that is this bill specifies that the $2.5 billion base was the base for 1982. It was the limit for 1982, and it was not the base which needed to be adjusted for 1982. Secondly, there was some confusion regarding whether a product formula should be used or a multiplicative formula should be used. By that I mean whether the population rate of growth should be added to the inflation rate before applying it to the base, or whether they should be adjusted multiplicatively. This bill specifies now that the product formula shall be used in making those adjustments. And thirdly, this bill sidesteps the issue of absence of data. Both the indices that it prescribes are available 6 months prior to the time when the executive budget comes in for consideration. So for the 85 budget, both the indices were available in July 83, and there's no... It avoids the use of any projections, which often lead to disagreement and possible revisions. These were the three ambiguities that were clarified by this bill. There were several population indices that could be used, and there were about at least two inflation indices that can be used. The reason... There are pros and cons of using each of those indices from an economic standpoint, and I can go into a discussion of some of those pros and cons if you like.
What I'd like to do at this time is ask questions of any members on any aspects of this particular bill. Representative Lindauer.
Yeah. Technical question, Mr. Chairman, perhaps to you. What happens 15 years from now when we have a new population of the census? Are we going to build on, say, the 1990 estimate, or are we going to build on the new census number in 1990? What if you projected using this approach, which is fine, you projected to a population of 550,000, the census comes out, that's 520,000. Will you go on from 1990 using 520 or 550? Which will you use?
Okay. On it, the first thing is under this particular act, this Appropriation Act, there's a repealer clause in there in 1986. Okay, so I won't know in 1990 if the spending plan is going to be there. But if it was, and the people said it was, then I think that the legislature in 1990 can address it and then probably do a different average. See, I'm taking the 1960 and 1970, and then perhaps when the legislature can do 1970 1980 and redo the spending plan, if it's in effect then.
Good answer. Thank you.
Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, major concern I have is the population count. Number one, we do know, by the work I've done mostly during the interim, that the federal census, people in Washington admit they were short. And there's a number of reasons why they did that. They chose to count the urban areas at the wrong time when they should have counted them in the fall rather than in the spring and stuff like that. And then out in the royal community, they seem to have counted them wrong too when they were out in fishing and whatever. But there's enough justification that came around that said that those things, if anything, were short than what Alaska's true population was. Secondly, it seems to me, rather than on a percentage of what happened during the 70s, because we know we had some boom and bust, we know beginning from the 80s, there's been a steady, stable climb that stays now because of employment, no boom and bust, and steady industries or however they're making their monies. And I'm worried that, it seems to me from my investigation, for whatever reason we're doing them, that the Department of Labor has been consistently good over the years in giving us our true population count after they adjusted what local communities sent in. The people in that department were quite conscientious how local communities may fudge a little bit on their population count, and they redo it. I was wondering why we don't use them on an annual basis instead of just a percentage over a 10-year period.
Okay, the Alaska Department of Labor, according to its own admission, has been pretty erratic both in the schedule and the accuracy of its population estimates. Over the last couple of years, there was an improvement in the methods used and an attempt to get some consistency into the methods used. However, prior to that, they, according to their own people, there was a degree of inaccuracy involved in the estimates. So because of that lack of consistency, right at this point, there's some instability in that the department lacks a state demographer right now, and also some of the vital statistics that they need from the Department of Health and Social Services are not forthcoming, so they don't have an estimate right now. They don't have a population estimating procedure right now.
Continue. Tell me, for me, they had the procedures going in. I know they've had a lot of ups and downs, and why the demographer got shoved out, God only knows. But it said that some of it may have been internally when they did try to clean up the system and tell certain communities and even CRA that, hey, these figures aren't right, and we question them. Evidently, there were some internal problems that the demographer couldn't solve. But I think we got to zero in on some department. Who else besides the gas? Because the most important thing you've done here is put the CPI in. It's beautiful. We should have done it 2 years ago. But that population count is just as important. And if we don't have some department, we may find ourselves really short on our formula programs unless we get a better account. Who would you rely on besides the formula for a true head count?
Mr. Chairman, there's another problem with using the state population estimates, and that is it's not clear whether they are federal indices or not, and the constitutional amendment requires us to use federal indices. So I think it's a legal question which I'm not competent to answer.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, sir, because I had that question here about federal people and federal military. And normally all states do count those, especially when it's in consideration with federal programs, school programs and so on. And the state, well, we can take similar like the North Slope situation where they say they service the people, the workers that come in 6 or 9 months out of the year. In Anchorage and Fairbanks, you may say that because of the military impact that they have a influence on the cost of the city services, streets, snow removers and so on. So here again, if that part hasn't been considered, I think it's extremely important that we make a decision if we're going to count people that otherwise we're saying, are we going to count people that are not Alaskan residents? And that means probably 25% of our citizens that live here.
I agree with you. There was widespread feeling after the 1980 census came out with its numbers that there was feeling among the communities that there was an undercount of their population. However, there has been no change in the numbers that were put out during the 1980 census, either through appeals or through court litigation. The Census Bureau has stuck by its April 1, 1980 numbers, and in fact, there hasn't been any change anywhere in the country. There were other cities, Chicago and Detroit, for example, that felt the same way, that their populations had been undercounted, but court litigation hasn't changed those numbers as yet.
Well, one more question, Mr. Speaker. Are we then going to be kind of bind into this federal census figure and then give the percentage per year? The reason why I ask that is that when we know without a doubt, even though the federal won't change their minds once they get the final report, that's still going to hurt us for the years to come when those who really want to get a 2% of cost of government services on population. And we also know, Mr. Chairman, and I hope to work on it personally, to get the federal census, to do it differently, they're still going by the old methods of the territorial day. And so therefore it's extremely hard for the division of reapportionment to even guess when you draw lines what the true population is, because their census tracts are completely different from the local communities. So I'd hate to get bind into that, is what I'm saying.
Mr. Kim, the census numbers are going to be constant for 10 years. The next time that rate of growth that we use for the spending limit is going to change is going to be in 1992, when the new 1990 census comes out. So there's going to be no change in the population adjustment for the next 7 years. And I agree with you, there's a problem in that the short-term fluctuations in population are not taken into account. However, the trend that we are using is a good predictor of population growth over the long run. If you compare the rate of growth of population in the 60s, as calculated by this formula, to the rate of growth of population in the 1970s, they are almost identical. There's a very marginal difference between the two growth rates. So over the long run, this adjustment does provide a good estimate.
Further questions? If not, thank you very much. I'd like to at least call up Tom Chester with OMB.
My name is Tom Chester. I'm with the Division of Strategic Planning in the Office of Management and Budget. We have no comments, sir.
What, recommendations? Good.
Is OMB supporting this legislation, or opposing it, or you have no opinion on it?
In the words of my director, we do not oppose this bill.
Thank you.
But for putting the budgets together for the future, the executive budgets for the whole state of Alaska, this is the type of bill that you need, and also the proposed letter of intent on how to figure and calculate it for not only for future administrations, for also future legislatures that might be in this position next year when some of us are not here. Is that correct?
We have supplied you with our interpretation of the bill and what it's what it would mean for the spending limit, and we're in agreement with you as to what that limit would be, and we believe it's easily derived given the language of the bill, and there should not be any confusion if it were adopted.
It was the OMB's recommendation also on line number 14, the change from a word from sum to product. Yes. What this does, am I correct, it increases the spending limit, but not by very much. If we go out and calculate it the way we have done it in legislative analysts like Mr. Dillian, it's only a 12.8 increase over either the additive versus the product. Isn't that correct?
That's right, sir. It's a very small change.
Questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Chester.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill number 524? It's a chair's recommendation to pass out committee substitute for House Bill number 524 with a zero fiscal note with a letter of intent in your files. It's a pleasure of the body.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass this bill out with individual recommendations along with the fiscal note
and the letter of intent.
And the letter of intent.
There's objection for comments. Representative
Martin. Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, for my clarification, as we see it now, then we're saying that the multiplication and the additive will allow us a budget of for fiscal year 84, $3,001.51.
No. Go to the next one. It would give you $3,164,200,000 under the product.
With that in mind, sir, has anyone, I was looking through it real quick, what is our population base? We're saying is the 1983 population of Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, the 1983 population, it doesn't come into the calculations of this. We are using the 1970 and the 1980 population.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, that's my very problem, is we've had substantial increases. And we can't go by the decades of the 70s. We know that in other elements, the various cities, I've been gathering these up for all summer in the various schools. And I admit there's no two ways. When you put your school population down, DOE's population, the state's population, CRA's population, it goes from one extreme to the next. And I'm saying that Labor and Commerce has come, the Department of Labor has come to it closer. But if we wanted to really zero in to what our two population, we have to go by something else, or we're going to find ourselves serious in trouble. I don't want to increase the budget, to say the least, but I do think that's an important factor to have so that we know how many people we have to serve compared to 4 years ago. It's probably a gain of 70, 80,000 at a minimum.
Representative Martin, this is perhaps one of the best mechanism at this time that we can come to and calculate and have an actual amount by using the average of those years. I agree with you that there, you know, you'd like to perhaps take the population of 1982, 1983, you know, on that. Mm-hmm. But this, as far as the spending limit is concerned, this is the most accurate number that we can come up. And it is also one that's in a Senate bill to similar the spending plan. Mr. Chester, would you like to address him on this one?
There are alternative measures of population that can be used. The Census Department does provide an annual estimate of population for Alaska, and it is true that that growth rate is much higher than the growth rate from the 1970 to 1980 period. That's always a possibility that such a number could be used, but we have no objection, you know, to the way it is being constructed. Now, the growth rate from that, the census numbers for July 82 to July 83 will be roughly 10.5-11% in the Alaska population. Part of that, though, might be an error. One of the reasons the growth rate is so high for the 82-83 period was that they underestimated the growth rate from 81 to 82. So part of that is kind of a catch-up. So, and those numbers are subject to revision. Right now, the number that generates the 10.5% growth rate in population is provisional and could be very well subject to change over the next 6-7 months.
Not to belabor this point, but at one example, when we passed the giveaway program, the dividend program, just a couple of years ago, the best estimate by all of our experts in the statewide said it would be 404,000 maximum population. Well, we see real quick we ended up with 474,000 people getting dividend checks. Mm-hmm. So it made me wonder, and looking at Hess Committee, all the reports we get, who's serving who, no one really has an idea what our two counties.
Representative Martin, when we first computed an option that we put in the executive budget book, we came out with a limit of $4,654,000,000. Using the latest estimates of population from the U.S. Census Bureau, that number is now almost $4,800,000,000, where you try to adjust for what they claim to be the growth in population. And the number that we're using for inflation in state and local goods and services. So, in one sense, there's a wide range. We ourselves computed spending limits that probably ran over $1 billion window. So, depending on your assumptions, so you certainly can get a wide variety of answers.
Your objection removed?
No, just for discussion. You know.
The objection to the motion has been removed. Committee substitute for House Bill number 524, Finance. The zero fiscal note and the letter of intent is moved out of committee. Is there anything else to come before House Finance? If not, House Finance is adjourned.
House Whip, please.
Would the House Finance please come to order? This afternoon I'll take up House Bill number 371. It's the sale of Prudhoe Bay Royalty Oil by the State of Alaska to Tesoro Alaska Petroleum Company. House Bill 320, sale of Royalty Oil by the State of Alaska to Tesoro Alaska Petroleum Company. And Senate Bill 269, the sale of Royalty Oil by the State of Alaska to Chevron. One of the reasons that I pulled these bills from the floor so we can at least have a chance to look at four different areas. The first area was the interpretation of the receipt and possible rewarding of the language in the contract. Under most of the agreements under Article 3.5, we will be keeping the wording the same as it is, with the second interpretation where it's subject to the purchaser's existing contracts, that the purchaser grants to sell an option to purchase all or any quantity of the residual oil purchased or refined from the royalty oil herein. So we're going to use that language there. The other item that we had problems was with the material amendments. We made those in House Finance. One of the things I'm going to have to do as far as the Chevron contract is concerned is I will be doing a second bill on the Chevron, taking the materials language off of there, because I didn't want it to fail on the floor due to a technicality. The materials amendment is already in the proposed agreement. You'll be seeing that come by. The third item that the chair had a problem was on local hire, and the language that we have signed off by Tesoro and Chevron and the administration reads that the purchaser agrees to hire and employ Alaska residents and Alaska companies to the extent they are available, willing, and qualified for all work performed in Alaska that is performed under or in connection with the agreement, including but not limited to the expansion of the purchaser's Kenai, Alaska refinery and employment in the refinery operations as used in this agreement. Alaska residents mean an individual who has resided in the state for 1 year at the time of hiring or employment, and Alaska companies mean those companies that are incorporated in the state of Alaska or whose principal place of business is in Alaska. If this provision is determined to be unconstitutional by the courts of competition jurisdiction, then purchaser agrees to hire and employ Alaskan residents and Alaska companies to the extent such preferential hiring is determined to be constitutional. The second item that we had was the price term proposal. There was a debate on the netback price of West Coast versus the invalued plus 35% premium. It is the chair's wishes that we go with the agreement that was acted on by the administration and the oil companies, which is the invalued plus 35. There, I just want you to realize there is a difference between the two Tesoro and Chevron contracts. The price of Tesoro is invalued plus 35 cents plus a reopener after 6 years. The one with Chevron is invalued plus 30 cents plus a 2-year reopener. It would be at the pleasure of the chair to take up first. The first one is the second House CS for Senate Bill number 269, Finance, the Chevron bill. Is there any questions on this particular bill or what I have stated?
Chairman?
Yes.
Are we correct? Primary effect of this bill is to take sales that are now at the weighted average plus 94 cents and reduce that to plus 30 cents, so that we are net reducing the price to Chevron by 64 cents a barrel with no material other considerations to the state.
Representative Lindau, you are correct in that. We are reducing. We had the administration in the past had signed contracts for 1 year for 94 cents plus the invalid. We are lowering that to 30 cents plus the invalid. You are correct with a 2-year reopener. Any further questions? It would be my intention at this time that House Finance passes out the second House CS for Senate Bill number 269, Finance. Representative Martin.
Mr. Chairman, a motion that we pass with individual recommendation, second House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 269, Finance. Amended. Yes,
is there any objected? Hearing no objection, Senate Bill 269 is moved out of committee. The next two bills I will take up is House Bill number 320 and House Bill number 371. Representative Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to motion that committee substitute for House Bill number 320, Resource, amended, be passed out of committee with individual recommendations.
Object only for a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Is it correct that other than the employment guarantees for which I think you are to be thanked by the state of Alaska, which probably doesn't get realized for the efforts, the primary impact of this is to sell oil on the West Coast for approximately 20 to 40 cents below the West Coast netback in Alaska. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Lindauer. It is correct, but there are times that the netback price in the West Coast varies along with the invalued price, and the difference can go anywhere from $1.31 down to 1 cent or break even or the other way. It's hard to say. But in fact, in November of 1983, the difference there was 24 cents.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to slow this whole process down, but and I came in late, so I apologize, but I don't seem to have any amended copy before me.
Pardon me, sir?
Amendments?
Not in 320, though.
There are no amendments in 320.
He said resources amended. That's what he said.
320?
Anyway, I don't have the information, but it probably doesn't make any difference.
Would you like to request to hold these over, Representative Duncan?
Beg your pardon?
You have the floor, Representative
Quite
Duncan.
Quite an offer. No, go ahead. I just want to have the information.
There's a motion before you. Is there any objections? Hearing no objections, House Bill number 320 is out of committee. The last one we're going to take up is House Bill 371. Representative Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to motion that committee substitute for House Bill 371, Resource Amended, passed out of committee with individual recommendation.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. That concludes the agenda for the House Finance this afternoon. House Finance is adjourned. You have two bills before you. One is committee substitute for Senate Bill 345, Finance. I'm going to hold that over a day. It's a supplemental bill. I've got a couple items that's missing that I would like to take up tomorrow. It's an act making a supplemental appropriation for the operation of the legislature and providing for an effective date. This particular bill would do a couple things. It's the Senate TV and the press room and Senate Resource Committee for Lobbying to Influence the United States, amending the export transportation and also the expenses for the oil and gas. So I'm going to hold that over for a day. We'll bring this up tomorrow when I get the backup on this.
One question, Mr. Chairman. I note that the $75,000 for the Senate oil and gas, what's happening with the House Oil and Gas Committee? Do they have sufficient funds, do we know?
Yeah, we have not had any requests because they got the money from the House Leadership Fund, if that's correct, and probably the Senate has ran out of money. But I'm holding that over a day till we get the backup information. Let's see if we can find that tolerance. Okay, the only bill we've got then before is House Bill 493. This particular bill is an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for preventive measures related to collisions between motor vehicles and moose on the Glen Highway and providing for an effective date. The sponsors by Phillips and Liska. The bill would appropriate $3 million to provide lighting along the Glen Highway between Muldoon Road and Anchorage and Eagle River. The purpose of the lighting would be to cut down on the number of moose killed along the highways. I got some questions on this as far as cost, and I'd like to see if we can work out some type of arrangement, but I'd like first to hear from Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Randy Phillips, representing House District 15, home of the moose. What we have here is like exactly what the chairman has announced, that we do have a problem with moose between Glen Highway or between Eagle River and Muldoon Road on the Glen Highway. There's about an 8 to 10 mile stretch. There's particularly two points along the highway there that the moose travel through year in and year out, and they have been for hundreds if not thousands of years. As the most of the moose car collisions occur at night and during the winter. And as we approach late fall, early winter, and the snow is hit the mountains, it forces the moose to come down from the mountains and down to the valley and cross the highway. In between Muldoon, which is the outer skirts of the city of Anchorage, and Eagle River is a military reservation for those who are do not live in South Central Alaska. A military reservation is basically made up of just woods, and the moose migrate and graze on the reservation. They come down, like I said, they come down in the from the mountains in the wintertime down to the lowlands and cross the highway. And as a consequence, they're being hit by motorists. Now, the Glen Highway is also a feeder not only for Eagle River, but the whole Matanuska Valley area. We have approximately 40,000 cars go through every day, which probably be around, we're talking about 80,000 people one way each and every day. That's about the extent of the problem we have. We're just having too many moose and people either being killed or hurt. Yes. Fortunately, we have not had anybody, the person that is, killed, but we have had injuries. I've asked, since this bill went through transportation, I have asked public safety to compile a data sheet, and that's in front of you. And I just received it Thursday. And staff and finance said I didn't need any more information, but I thought I'd just include that in your packet. And I'm just here to, I'm just here to answer any questions you may have.
Representative Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. This problem has been long existing in the East Anchorage area up to Eagle River, and I'm kind of surprised somewhat that my former fellow representative used the moose problem as the major excuse for needing this lighting. We truly need it. Finally, statistics that we just received showed the human accident problem. That's the number one issue I don't know how many of you gentlemen have ridden in there during the winter months, but it's extremely dark. And no sooner do you leave Muldoon, and the kids go home in the afternoon from Bartlett High School, they're going east. It's extremely dangerous, whether there's moose nearby or not. I think that we cloud the problem when we use the moose as an excuse for needing lighting, and that kind of softens the real issue. The real issue is human life and human accidents, and just the numerous times people run off that road because when you go to Hillcrest Drive, for one, Highland Drive, my eyes aren't the best in the world, but you have to really slow down to see how that curve goes to your left rather than go forward where you get on the overpass. And many a person has made that mistake. So my question to Representative Finley is why are we emphasizing the moose, which really takes away from the true issue of human accidents and so on?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I am by just applying this information here, which we tried to deliver on Thursday about the property damage and injuries to human humans. Period. You know, I think we are attempting to address both problems. Of course, the main concern here is the life and limb of human beings. And the moose have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and we've had a tremendous increase in traffic. Most of the members of the committee know that at least my community has grown 41% in 1 year, and the Manamuska Valley is right behind it, I think, believe 30-35%. And the only difference between now and 20 years ago is the amount of traffic, you know, increased, I'd say, tenfold.
Have you had a chance to talk with the people, Water Waste Department, Utility Department of Anchorage, and Fort Richardson? Because in the same stretch, while we definitely need the lights, and we're talking about moose problems, they want about 4 mile stretch of fencing on the north side of that highway for so-called security purposes. And we know all it's going to do is stop the moose from going one way. And you know, here again, some people say when you put lights out there, which I say number one reason, human beings, if you put lights there for animals, it's going to attract more of them.
Yeah, I failed to mention to the committee that about a year and a half ago, I and members of the District 15 delegation have gotten a hold of DOT to do a study on this. This right here is the result of that response. DOT, Fish and Game people, that's Alaska Fish and Game, and the military have all agreed that lighting is probably the best solution to the problem. They have looked at underpasses, overpasses, fencing, and they could not agree, basically speaking, that it would alleviate some of the problems.
And I think you're taking it the wrong way. I feel that fence is going to be a hazard if they're forced to put that fence up.
Yeah, well, I'm asking $3 million for lighting.
Yeah.
I just want to make you aware, fencing was considered by all parties concerned, and Fish and Game was the main, they were the people that were against fencing because if the mother, the cow moose has calves, one or two, she'll jump the fence, but the calf will be left behind and be caught in between the two fences on the highway, and it'll cause more of a problem than it would solve. So they had felt, and because of the wind and snow drifting and the size of the animal knocking down the, you know, 6, 8, or 10 foot fence, they had felt that the lighting would be best for both the animal and the motorists along the highway. Some of this money will be used for clearing and brushing on both sides of the highway, too.
Representative Furness?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to read through the information. I'm aware that there's a need for lighting along that stretch of property. I don't see anything that tells us with any degree of certainty that additional illumination along that stretch is going to prevent moose from crossing the street there, therefore causing the accident. As you well know, during the winter time when that light would probably be most advantageous, the fact that a moose is in the middle of the road or is about to cross in front of the vehicle probably won't stop them from doing such. The other point of concern is setting up a precedent throughout the state. Up in the Delta area, we have the buffalo. I guess that's creating quite a bit of problem. Are we going to illuminate provide the same type of illumination up there, and I would assume in other areas of the state we have similar game problems. The last point, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps the sponsor of the legislation can respond to, there are at least one, or perhaps two greenhouses in the Anchorage area that has the same problems with moose, in that the moose are destroying their inventory. And I guess the overall concern is we provide a Band-Aid solution or any type of a solution. Are we willing to continue that with the other type of operation? And, you know, we could be setting somewhat of a precedent by doing this at this time. And I just want some response on that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay. First of all, we were faced with this problem. It was brought to my attention 3 to 4 years ago on the moose problem. Now, I'm not a professional as far as DOT matters are concerned. That's why we handed it over to DOT. Now, this is their recommendation that DOT, Fish and Game, and the military have recommended that lighting would be the best solution to alleviate some of the problems that we've been experiencing the last few years. To respond to the second part, I don't believe Delta's having 40,000 cars going through on their highways one way each day. So there is, in my mind, there is a difference between this situation and the situation up in the interior, or for that matter, anywhere in the state. We're not just talking about traffic in just Anchorage or Eagle River, but also Palmer, Wasilla, Houston, Talkeetna, Sutton area, flowing into the Anchorage almost on a daily basis.
Mr. Chairman, if I could redirect my question, do we have anything other than a statement by Department of Fish and Game or perhaps Public Safety saying that this is their recommendation? Is there anything that's saying that this has worked other places? Or anything more definitive to show that this is a reasonable solution to the problem?
Okay, if you look in your backup information, there's a study they made.
Which one is it? You got a whole bunch of it.
Let's go about 4 or 5 pages of that. They've contacted various places around the country and, for that matter, around the world, particularly in Sweden. And this is, after doing the research here from the research department within DOT and Fish and Game, this cover letter, what you have on top, is their recommendation. See, Fish and Game and DOT have been going back and forth on this. When we first made an inquiry 3 or 4 years ago, DOT had recommended lighting and fencing, and Fish and Game wanted lighting, and they've worked out their differences, and this is what they've come up with.
But again, Mr. Chairman, the question has not been answered. Do we have anything to definitively show that this is an answer to the moose car collision, and are moose sufficiently frightened by the lighting in order to prevent them from crossing the road indiscriminately? That's the main question. I don't mean to be argumentative about it. It's a problem we need to address, but is this the proper approach?
I think that question can be properly addressed to DOT and Fish and Game. Because I really
are they here,
not
Mr. Chairman?
Qualified to answer that.
Mr. Chairman? Randy, in one of these informative packets that you have here, they mention three things that should be used to prevent accidents of this kind. One of them, fencing, which they think is the best. Second, illumination. And the third, underpasses, so that the moose, who for reasons known only to another moose, want to cross the road one way or the other. And that's an age-old thing, atavistic, if you will, they're not going to be prevented from trying to do it no matter what we put up. I'm wondering why you picked the illumination in preference to the fence, and shouldn't you, in order to accomplish what the moose want to do and allow the people to accomplish what they want to do, both be accommodated by the underpass and the fencing and the lighting?
Okay. To answer the...
$2 million.
I have met with DOT late last year on the underpasses, overpasses. Number one, it's going to be prohibitively high to redesign the Glen Highway from Eagle River to Muldoon for moose overpasses. And even if you do have the overpasses or underpasses, the moose may or may not choose to go that route. Or if they do, they'll get tied up with the traffic and being funneled all into one area. The second part about the fencing, it was Fish and Game was opposed to it because of the migratory patterns of the moose, because of the cow moose jumping the fence and leaving back one or two calves, and then she's getting nervous and panicking between the two fences on the four-lane highway would cause more of a problem. Second thing is the snow drift. And we've had a lot of snow this past couple of weeks, and it's real easy for them just to jump the fence and still be on the highway, or just plain old knock it down. These animals are pretty big, and nothing seems to stop them, even cars. So it's a tough question. I mean, I wish there was another way of doing it with almost the assurances that that no one gets hit, but this is what they've come up with. DOT, Fish and Game, and the military working together, and they apparently feel that this is the best solution to the problem with the money constraints.
Have they given any thought to making that part, that 10 miles, an elevated highway? Or is that, again, ruinously expensive?
I don't know whether they have or not. That's a question that we can ask DOT about. I don't know. I would imagine it would cost more than $3 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any jackliner can tell you that an animal or a moose is not frightened by light, and I know exactly what your intent here, and that is to simply be able to see that particular animal should he or she decide to cross the road. And you were talking about brushing as well along the shoulders.
That has been done.
Yeah, and
in parts.
Yeah, and now my question was, before some of the other questions came out, that there is other benefits tied in with this, tied in with the use of that road by the public, and so we're not just talking about moose itself, we're talking about general safety. Getting back to the moose.
Let me just add one thing here. There is a safety factor here, whether the moose are there or not, and that is, this past winter, with the exception of last month, we've had a lot of slush, and when it hits the headlights, you really can't see. Period.
Representative Phillips, I'm supportive of this bill, but I'm very pleased to see that there was some other benefits that we have derived at, and Representative Martin pointed that out, and that's what I wanted. That was the first thing that hit my mind. You know, what else is there? And I'm satisfied with that. Now, there's another question, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to approach on the moose. I know that there's been several special seasons up there for moose because they are around the highway area and it creates a hazard. Would this lighting perhaps prevent some of those special seasons and unnecessary over-harvest of these moose, even though they say there are overabundance of them? In other words, would we no longer have an excuse to have these special seasons?
I don't think so. The military, first of all, the military is the one allows Fish and Game to have these special hunts. They just had one in November, December 35, issued 35 permits.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I was getting at is they always use under the guise of the fact that it was a public safety hazard that too thin.
Yeah. As I understand it, for this year and last year, the harvests were for the public safety and health.
Thank you, Representative Randall. I'm satisfied.
Representative Bez Hilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has that report given any thought to just adding a bunch of buckle safety seat belt signs along the way and illuminating them real good? Moose crossing all along.
Oh yes, you're talking about. Because
people drive like hell through there.
I understand
through
that.
There is
a warning signs. There are warning signs, I should say, all along the highway. Moose, warning moose. Next 3 miles.
There's one I've seen going to the north. There's one.
Right. Need people crossing signs so the moose.
Moose can't leave.
I mean, moose don't.
Why does a moose cross the road?
They can't leave.
Get on the other side.
Representative Besworth.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randy, I think it's commendable that you're taking this problem on, and I recognize that it is a problem. And there's no question that lighted highways are safer under any circumstances, whether there's moose in the area or not, than unlighted highways. But according to the information that was presented to us down in the Transportation Committee, Fish and Game themselves say that even the lighting would maybe prevent 20% of the accidents. And in view of the cost, the lighting system taking care of only 20% of the problem, in my way of thinking, does not justify the expenditure of $3 million. And certainly the people who drive that road constantly are more aware of the potential problem than would a casual driver who drives through there. So these people are aware of the problem, and if they continue to persist in putting themselves in jeopardy by ignoring a known situation, that is the prerogative of free citizenry. And if, when we also was testified that there were 600 moose in that area, many of us in the rest of the state envy greatly a moose population that size in that small geographical area. Vernon would be tickled to death if there were half that many moose in a geographical area around his community that size. I would too. We have a lot of moose in Fairbanks, and we enjoy seeing them. But now I have a solution that would solve this problem. In Fairbanks, to try to increase our moose population, we're trying to kill wolves. But the environmentalists who love wolves better than they do moose don't want us to kill them. So for a few thousand dollars, we'll trap a couple of a bunch of wolves? Pack. A couple of wolf packs. Present them to you in Eagle River, Anchorage area. And I'll guarantee you that the moose population will come down, and there will be some more wildlife there for the environmentalists to enjoy and see.
Well, there's only one problem with that, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Yes. And that is the city of Anchorage is going to put their city dump right smack in the middle of that whole thing. So I think the wolf pack will probably be eating out of a garbage dump.
Well,
there.
I can guarantee you they're better loose.
Well, the only thing I can say is that, you know, we do have the problem. We have an increase in the traffic population, and it's a real problem. Over the weekend, I did not see the accident itself, but I did see the remains of what was hit by a car Saturday. So it seems like there isn't a day, particularly in the wintertime, where I don't see an accident. The response to Representative Bedsworth, we just had most of these people that are moving in are new to the state. And I see it in my community in Eagle River. Most of them are military personnel that are buying homes at this low interest rate the state's offering, zero down, so on and so forth. We had just last weekend a 36-car pileup on the Glen Highway in that section. Now, Moose was not responsible for that accident. But if you looked at the addresses of those people, they were none of them, to my knowledge, were either from Eagle River or Matanuska. They were all down in downtown Anchorage or around the outskirts of Anchorage. So we have a tremendous amount of new people coming into the community, and also in the Matanuska Valley there, that just don't know how to handle winter driving, number one, and secondly, to compound the problem, we got these animals running around on the highway and really don't know how to handle it. So that's another problem we have to contend with. If you have a solution to the problem, like tranquilizing these moose and send them up to Fairbanks to feed the wolves, I'll be more than happy to entertain that one.
I'll take them.
Representative Furness?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Phillips, do you have any data showing what months that the string of accidents taking
yes,
place
I do.
In?
Yes,
Could
I
you
do.
Share that with
us? It's right. I don't have it right here. It's all upstairs in my files. Most of them are in the wintertime.
Yeah, but I think it'd be more helpful if we knew. For example, in 1983, it looked like there had been 32 accidents and 10 injuries. What months did
That's
those accidents take place? So the 6th in 1982, what months did those take place? Because if you consider the long daylight hours in south central Alaska, it doesn't seem to be the total solution to the problem.
Well, I'll just give you my experiences. November.
Oh, what I'm asking for is documented data. Your experience won't help me in making a decision on this. Mr. Chairman, if I may go on. I notice here in a letter to the chairman dated February 9th, 84, from a Marge Founds from 121 Foothill Drive. She states here, there was also a proposal to slow the traffic down in these areas. This is not a solution. When I leave Eagle River at 6 a.m. Every morning, the traffic is bumper to bumper, and most of the jerks are passing me doing at least 60 to 65 miles an hour. A moose jumping out into congested and fast-moving traffic could only cause damage to the car hitting it, but the chain reaction of the other following is a frightening thing. It is a nightmare driving the highway in the winter because we cannot see the moose alongside the road. It appears that even though you put the illumination there, you still probably would not be able to see the moose. It appears that the most effective solution to this would be a speed reduction in that particular area. We're talking 8 to 10 miles, and realizing that that could slow the traffic down considerably. But it appears that for $3 million that we could save that and simply put a 15 or 20 mile an hour speed zone from the, in that particular section and enforce it quite strongly, because as this lady has indicated, I don't care what you do, as long as that traffic is bumping them off, particularly in the wintertime. People are going to run over moose. Moose are going to be out on that road there. And it doesn't, in my mind, really meet the whole question. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, and to the sponsor, the military has been very, very protective of the wildlife on its reservation. And most of that moose population is coming from the uninhabited section of the military reservation there. It appears that they ought to take some responsibility. They won't let civilians go back and kill those moose or try and do some type of control. And they ought to bite the bullet themselves and do what they need to do to safeguard. And you indicate a lot of the people are getting hurt, or new people to Alaska who are military people. And I guess the question is, what has the military done to show its responsibility in protecting lives?
As far as I know, nothing.
Then, Mr. Chairman, it appears we ought to go back to them, too.
If you're talking about money, we're not going to, I don't believe we're going to get it out of the military.
They have a responsibility for a large number of the people being hurt are their people from the post or from the base there, then they ought to take some responsibility. Mr. Chairman, I would ask again through the chair that if the information is available as to when and the dates or the time of the year that these accidents are most frequent, that would certainly give us additional information, plus testimony before this committee from DOT and Fish and Game as to their recommendations. I note that I don't believe either one of those agencies are here.
There's a representative from DOT just taking notes not to answer questions.
It would certainly be helpful. I'd like to hear from them.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lindauer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of comments, then I have a serious question for the representative. I'd call the committee's attention to the Jerry Ward plan, I'll call it.
Since he's not here.
We have biologists, we have game wardens, we have more people studying these moose per moose. It may well be that they outnumber the moose. And one of the alternatives from my colleague from Anchorage was, instead of lighting the road, we might want to try to light the moose. That we have check them out all the time, why don't we just hang a light on them and save a lot of money? The alternative to that, we could bring in some wolves, that's been suggested, but I would point out to my esteemed colleague from Fairbanks, the reason this herd is so big and healthy is we do not allow aerial wolf hunting. You see, the natural selection, they cull out the weak ones, and that herd is big and strong. And the moral of the story is you probably ought to drop aerial hunting in some of those areas so you can get your herds big and strong, too. We don't allow aerial wolf hunting in that area.
Don't allow any kind of wolf hunting?
Oh, no, we go up there, we shoot them down with bows and arrows and guns and all kinds of stuff. People complaining for someone shooting, there was some story in the paper just last week, Representative Bettesworth, not last week, last month, about somebody who came upon some hunters who were busy dressing out a moose in their backyard, and they were a little outraged about it.
Questions of Representative Phillips?
My serious comment would be, instead of lighting, if it's only 20%, if you're aware of the problems that the rancher got into in, I believe it was Wyoming or something, because he put a great big high fence and the animals couldn't get through, instead of a lighting, which is going to cause us to buy electric bills and everything else, and apparently not resolve the problem, why don't we build a very high fence? I don't know how high it has to be for moose not to get over it, but I would suspect it doesn't have to be that high, and we can channel them along to some opening or underpass or whatever and solve the thing once and for all. If all we're going to do is spend $3 million to solve 20% of a problem, that may not be a solution. What do you think?
Well, that was proposed to Fish and Game.
Opposed it?
Opposed it.
Well, they're not only omnipotent at all times.
That's why we had three groups get together with this study, and this is the recommendation. I've been going around and around 3 years on this thing. This is what they've proposed. This is their proposed solution to the problem.
Well, DOT would obviously want lights because it's a road and they would control the lights. Fish and Game would want biologists to study them. But I would think that as representative people, we might want fences in order to stop the problem.
Well, I don't have an answer for that.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Chairman, I
I'm not sure why we're discussing this for a half hour, but I'd just like to ask you a couple of questions about why we're actually... It's been my experience that if you don't send through capital appropriations on separate pieces of legislation in the legislature and be successful, and of course this is a capital appropriation, we're just putting together a capital budget which has a transportation category. I would think that if Mr. Representative Phillips and Representative Liska had that as a priority for their area, that they might have considered inserting it into the capital budget instead of us sitting here for a half hour or 45 minutes discussing it. We can discuss it as part of the capital budget. Secondly, I don't see that DOT has ever put it in their capital budget as a priority. Perhaps they should consider doing that. I guess my point is that I think this has been a very interesting discussion, but are you intending to move this as a separate capital project through both bodies, or should they be considering inserting it in their capital budget request if they think it's such a high priority?
On this, you'd have to ask Representative Phillips and Representative Liska if they had places in their capital projects.
The answer is no. Simply because our area is, Eagle River alone is bigger than Juneau, population-wise. And we picked
nothing
up
to do with it.
10,000 people. We've used up all our monies for schools and roads in our area. And Jim, as you know, what the political situation is, too, here. So, had I been...
I don't know what the political situation is. I just think it's a priority. Somebody could put it in their budget. The red list is part of the majority.
But it's my plan. You asked me what I'm planning to do. Is I do plan to put it into a subcommittee consisting of Fritz, Martin, and Zaroff, and I'd like to see something on this because of the fiscal note on it. They've asked me for $3.3 million here. Department of DOT has down 2.7. DOT still has put in 12% for construction administration. 12%, I remind you. 10% for contingency. 3% for preliminary engineering. Now that, there is 25% that DOT wants on this particular project.
I'll do it for 15.
I think that when you have DOT's budget, Representative Fritz, that you should take 25% right off their operating budget and they can get most of their money from some of these projects like this. I mean, this is something. But I do want to bring this bill back. It's not my intentions to hold this particular bill in subcommittee. I'd like it back out in two weeks. But the question is that there's an area on this 8-mile stretch that a majority of the moose is killed. Isn't that correct, Representative?
That's, well, that's two areas.
Is
one
there,
by the power station, the other one past
is there,
straightaway.
There perhaps that we can have a plan, a model area of doing something like this. Also, the calculations in here by DOT, there are some, they wanted the lights 220 feet apart. There's another backup, they say they can do it 275 feet apart. And I wonder, you know, DOT has, you know, calculations are terrible in this backup here.
Okay, the 275, maybe you can help me. I think it's has to do something with the Federal AIDS Highway Program, their standards, or else they will not allow the state to put it in so that highway is on the Federal AIDS system. And I think it has something to do with that. The 275, you're suggesting maybe every 300 or 400 feet or 500 feet. I've asked them about that, and it just doesn't fit with the federal guidelines, so as I understand it.
Then the other thing is if we're going to do a model, the operating cost that they have down here is for electricity, changing bulbs, thawing, and so forth, is in the neighborhood of 100,000. Somebody mentioned the daylight time in Alaska
mm-hmm.
is different. Is if we can get that calculated and have the subcommittee work with DOT and Fish and Game and see if this is a proper, if there is a small area that we can illuminate or even fence for that matter. That the area that we have the problem is between Sheep Creek and the power plant, and that's the area we should concentrate to take care of this. But it's not my intention, Representative Phillips, to hold this bill in committee. I just want to do some proper work through Representative Fritz and Representative Martin and Representative Zaroff so that we can have a proper bill before us in 2 weeks and go through these costs.
I do have this information. I have a computer. Mr. Chairman, your staff has asked me not to send you any more information. That's why we did not put this in here. This is the 1977 present. It has right here the date, the time, the location, exactly where the location, injuries, property damage, and the contributing factor, what caused the accident. In most of these cases, it has been the moose. It's either alcohol or just not paying attention to what you're doing. Okay. But anyways, right here, from the looks of it, just doing a cursory eyeball, it looks like November, January, February, and December, it looks like. I'll make this available to the committee.
Okay, very good. Representative Beswith, did you have something before?
Yeah, I wanted to comment that in view of the, it still intrigues me that there's that many moves in that area.
There's no...
This would be something for Mr. Lindauer's calculator, but the number of cars that go past the point on that highway on a daily basis, put into an equation with the number of moose, and it only takes care of 20% of the problem, a slight reduction in the moose population would make a tremendous reduction, it seems to me like, in the potential for accidents. And I think that could be possibly calculated.
Representative Martin?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that the major problem, as I can see, but it's still not being addressed, and it's not moose. There's probably more traffic in that stretch of 10 miles than any other major portion of the highway within the state, because of people coming down from the northern regions, from Matsu to go to work, from Eagle River to go to work, and vice versa. Anybody must go up north has to go through this section. And it is so heavily packed, and I'd like to ask Representative Film for the subcommittee if you can get an idea from the Department of Transportation the density of traffic in that area on a regular base. Also, the number of accidents without moose involved. It seems like every time I go up, no matter what month of the year it is, there's always accidents on the side because it's so heavily trafficked. And these, are, to me, are more important than anything else. We got into the military problem. Well, that is military land. There's a long-range agreement that the Alaska Highways go through that, and it is military property. And they have recently allowed us to take a corridor in addition to the highway for the new water waste lines going from Mayor Klutner or the community of Eagle River into Anglership Creek. So we're always extending onto military land and at a tremendous savings and not paying them in return. But I'd like to ask Representative Film to perhaps we should change our emphasis and show human lives, human accidents. Sure, the moose are part of the problem, but when this lady described the speeders going back and forth, when she described lowering the speed limit, I don't think that's going to help much because I'm probably one of the slowest guys on earth and moving at night, and I just can't see the road. Much less a moose. And it seems to me that we're hitting the wrong emphasis of the reason why we need lights along that stretch of the highway.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll pass since it's referred to subcommittee and get bullish later.
Okay. Representative Hurlburt? Representative Furness? He passed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted for the record to show that I am supportive of what the representative is proposing to do. It is a problem, and being from District 14, and we do have a considerable number of moose that are down in the subdivisions almost all times of the year, particularly in the wintertime. And the only thing I'd like to see is, if we're going to do this and spend the money, is let's make sure that it's going to address the problems substantially and not just be a Band-Aid. And we ought to also look at the problems at the commercial ventures, particularly the greenhouse. One of the largest greenhouses is in the Muldoon area. And these things are eating this guy out of business and just totally destroying his crops there. Senator Fakes and I spent a great deal of time this summer working with that individual, and you know they're talking $20,000 to $30,000 for fencing that it's acknowledged won't work. So I am supportive of what you're proposing to do, but to Band-Aid it just doesn't address it, and we need to really do some comprehensive work and get somebody of expert that can tell us what to do, and it appears that illumination is not the problem in total. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Chairman, if there is a subcommittee is going to pursue this, I think Representative Martin's got a point that you shouldn't be looking at it from a safety standpoint. Quite honestly, I think if you're doing it to illuminate a highway for safety reasons, there may be federal monies that can be used for that. And the amount of total state general fund dollars might be decreased tremendously if DOT would free up some federal monies to use to illuminate that highway for safety reasons. So the subcommittee should be looking at that. And you may only have 10% general fund requirements still be total amount. And if it's that big a problem, I don't know why DOT hasn't moved on anyway. I really don't. But I think federal dollars are probably available somewhere for that kind of project.
Last quick question. Representative Beswith.
Very briefly, it's been referred to several times in the conversation today that fences do not work, and that is in complete error. There have been fences developed worldwide to hold everything from a mouse to an elephant, and they are practical, they do work, they are being used all over the world for elephants, elk, antelope, bison, cattle, whatever, effectively in populated areas where their animals are contained, whether it will be wild or domestic. And so don't look at this with the idea that fences don't work. If you want, they do work and are working all the time.
Bamboo curtain, the iron curtain.
Representative Fritz, I'd like this bill before this committee in 2 weeks, please, and with these comments and concerns that you heard this afternoon.
Very well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Phillips, for your time today.
Thank you.
This concludes House Finance. As I said later, I'm going to look at the backup of committee substitutes for Senate Bill 348, an act making a special appropriation for the operating legislature. That will be taken up tomorrow. This completes House Finance. House Finance is adjourned.
Amen.
We need to find him.